How's it going, everyone? Ryan Schremp here with TomlessRobot.com. Just thanking you for listening to this podcast, and I wanted to let you know that we're building a podcast network. We currently have three podcasts, Animated Opinions, Cosmic Love, and Topless Robot Podcast. If you're enjoying this podcast, please check out our other podcasts. And if you're enjoying these podcasts, it would mean a lot to us if you look us up on iTunes and leave a review. That way, other people can find our podcasts. Or share it with your best friend. Nothing's better than sharing podcasts that are awesome with people who are awesome. So, thanks for listening, and here's the episode.
TomlessRobot.com presents...
You're listening to Animated Opinions, a podcast that promises it doesn't have pipe cleaners jammed through every limb that possibly exists. I'm Melanie.
And I'm Emily.
And today, we'll be talking about a movie you've never heard of. I know you haven't. I promise you, you haven't. 2007's Toys in the Attic. And if you're saying to yourself, what is that? Don't worry, because I did too.
So, it's 2009.
Oh, sorry.
Ugh. First of all. Yeah, so there are a lot of dates slapped on Toys in the Attic. I have seen 2012, 2013, and 2014 all listed as release dates, but this movie was actually released on March 5th, 2009, and it's a nice, concise, under 80 minutes for anybody who's interested in watching it, and you can watch it on Amazon Prime.
You can just watch.
Just as a little plug. Because, like, nobody's heard of this movie outside of me telling you about it, I think. Were you aware of this before?
Hell no. When you said it, I had to Google it and then Google, like, stop motion movie in order to get it to actually pull up.
Right, because there's an older movie, I think from the 1980s or the 19... It's either the 40s or the 80s, I swear, called Toys in the Attic, and I believe it is about somebody going insane, because funny enough, Toys in the Attic is like slang for going insane. I didn't know that.
Me either.
Until I tried to look up Toys in the Attic and was like, why am I getting all of these really, really weird titles? That's the English title of the movie. It has a Czech title, but I cannot pronounce it and I feel terrible, but I'm not going to try it and I'm not going to butcher it.
That's fair.
It's better for any Czech people that way.
Yes, we're sorry to all of our Czech listeners.
Wait, is Czechoslovakia still a country?
Oh, why you gotta ask the hard questions when we're live?
Hold on. CZE, Czech. No, okay, I think it's called the Czech Republic. I think it's split. I'm sorry, please hold. Czechoslovakia or Czechoslovakia is a foreign state in Central Europe that existed... Okay. It is the Czech Republic and Slovakia now. So I believe we are talking about the Czech Republic. So when we say Czechoslovakia, we mean the Czech Republic. So okay. Apologies. So it is a film from the Czech Republic because it was released in 2009, which was after the split in 1993. So... Shit, is Prague the capital of the Czech Republic?
Why
real sorry,
do you have to
everybody.
Ask the hard questions?
Because, no, this matters, because if I don't know the... Prague is definitely in the Czech Republic still. Got it. We're good. I'm so sorry.
All right. Now that we've determined European countries, may we determine the origins of this film?
Yes, the origin of this film is in the Czech Republic, and I'm assuming most of it was done in the capital of Prague, only because the director and filmmaker, Jiří Bárta, was born and raised in Prague. He was born in 1969, and he was studying film and TV graphics at the Academy of Arts and Architecture and Design in Prague, and then he made his first animated film in 1978 in Jiří Trnka's studio, which is one of the largest in Prague at the time. So everything in Jiří Bárta's life has basically happened in Prague. I do believe he is still there. He's still living, so that's nice. I will admit, when I saw this movie, I got Yuri Barta mixed up with Yuri Trinka, but Yuri Trinka is actually, he came before Barta. So Barta was his contemporary. If anyone is, you know, well-versed in stop motion animation or very interested in your Yuris of the Czech Republic. Fun facts. So, as most things in Barta's life, Toys in the Attic takes place in an attic of a home in Prague, and following the symbolism of the Cold War era that impacted Yuri Barta and the Czech Republic, formerly known as Czechoslovakia, the world of the attic is divided into the land of happy toys in the West, and that area is bright and colorful, and they've got full lives with jobs and pretty food, and everybody there is fantastic. And then there's the land of the evil in the East. And that is ruled by the head of state, which is just a despotic bust of a man. And he has a band of minions, which are insects and rotted vegetables and dust bunnies and basically bad things. We will address all of those bad things.
That makes this movie make a lot more sense.
So I took a class, so I won't say I extensively studied, but I did take a class on films in post-World War II Eastern Europe. So there were a lot of Polish films, a lot of, at the time, Czechoslovakian films, which I now would assume are Czech Republic films, but I'd have to look at each individual film to determine that. Sorry, everybody. Well, the Polish ones are easy because I know they're Polish and Poland hasn't divided anymore. Unlike when I was writing, I was like, this film was done in Yugoslavia, but Yugoslavia no longer exists. So now I have to find out where it was done and then go on to Wikipedia and look up when the state dissolved and where the filming location is now and make a reference to that. It was a lot of fun in that class. But a lot of the films and a lot of the animated films, it was easy to get things past the censors because they were animated. People didn't think a lot about animated movies. They showed before, air quotes around real movies, most of the time. So it was a lot easier to sneak things past the Russian censors, mm-hmm. which at the time weren't Russian. I believe they were the Soviet Union. there's going to be a lot of editing for historical accuracy in here. Mostly self-editing.
This is your episode.
Yeah, so these films, you could have all this meaning and you could have all this subversive content in them, and the Russian censors wouldn't really think anything of it. And as many people do today, they just kind of discredit it as an animated film. But yeah, films, you know, they had state funding, they had all this funding, and Yuri Barta actually, in an interview, was kind of lamenting the fact that when he made his early works, like The Pied Piper, they had all this funding from the state, and now that they're not a communist state, they're not ruled over by a communist society, they actually, it's harder to get funding for movies because there's no, like, film board funding them anymore. Because these films were kind of almost propaganda-esque. So if you wanted to make a film, it had to pass the censors, so you're not going to want to waste your money. There's a lot more, like, historical accuracy that would go into this if I remembered all of my research correctly or had my papers on hand.
I got it.
Yeah. I'm sure people will kind of get the gist of it. But they had all this money from the Soviet Union to make films that portrayed the Soviet Union in a more positive light, but you could kind of fit in these subversive undertones and sneak things past the censors. So if you've got a good eye, that's what they would do in live action films, but animation, once again, people didn't care as much. So Barta has other films, and like I mentioned, The Pied Piper. And they've won him many awards beginning in the 1980s. The Pied Piper, it's known by another name, but that's the English name. It's probably the best known of his works currently, especially in Europe and especially around the stop motion circuit. And Jiří Barta currently leads, or at the time, this is where it gets weird. It was hard to tell. So he led the film and TV graphics studio of the Academy of Arts, Architecture, and Design in Prague, and he was appointed as associate professor in 1993 and then professor in 2001. So when Czechoslovakia became the Czech Republic and Slovakia, that was when Barta was made an associate professor, and then years later in 2001 he was made an actual professor. And then in addition to his role teaching, he collaborates with theater and film projects, and Toys in the Attic, the production of it took place kind of after all this, probably took about, I would say, about a year. So if it came out in 2009, I would say it started in 2007 or 2008.
Dang.
Yeah. Stop motion. I love him. I love stop motion. It's how I started. It's how I want to end. It's amazing.
Yes. So we'll stop motion you into the grave.
Yeah. Just as a heads up for anybody that does decide to watch this movie, if you're expecting something along the lines of Laika, you're not going to get it. I don't want to shit on Laika, because their work is absolutely beautiful and it is flawless, which kind of takes away the charm of stop motion for me. So this movie, while it did come out in 2009, you're not going to see anything super fancy in it. And that, to me, is probably half of the charm.
No, it reminded me of the old stop motion segments that played on Pee-wee's Playhouse, which were often made out of clay and moved around very frantically.
Yeah. There's a lot going on in here. And we're gonna dive right in here. Oh, yep. Real quick, just Cary Elwes is the voice of there's a puppet named Sir Handsome, and he has to save another woman named Buttercup. So Princess Bride jokes will be abound, just as a heads up.
Yeah. So in an attic full of discarded junk, a pretty doll called Buttercup lives in an old trunk together with her friends, the marionette Sir Handsome, the lovable teddy bear, a mechanical mouse, Madame Curie, and a plasticine creature, Laurent. Everyone but Buttercup works at the train station because of sexism. When a new bust moves into the attic, he brings along some nefarious friends who seek to interrupt the pleasant routine our heroes have fallen into.
So the bust design has kind of always been there, though. It's just a metaphor for the Soviet Union.
Okay.
Yeah, so essentially Cary Elwes has to save another princess named Buttercup, and somehow nobody makes any jokes about this because it is dubbed over. It is an English dub of this movie. I'm sure there is an original Czech language track that we're not getting.
Yeah.
Mainly because I don't think a Czech director and animator would make a film with American audiences in mind, especially a film like this where it did release overseas first and then come to American markets like 4 years later. So it is a dub, so you're not going to get like beautiful lip sync, but you're also not getting beautiful lip sync no matter what.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Laurent looks like a butt, kind of. Like, he's brown and clay and is just very stretchy.
Yeah, he's definitely... He's made of a fuck ton of squash and stretch, but it's like when you have a lump of clay and you make something out of it. So he's got, like, a pencil stub for a nose, and he's got a mineral water bottle cap for a hat. I looked into it. I hoped it was a beer cap, but it is not. He has, you know, weird arms and legs, and he's got like broomstick hair, and he's not pretty, but he's funny to watch when he's animated. And I think that's the whole point. But it's like he's definitely picked up some wear and tear in his time in the attic. He's not pretty to look at.
Oh, yeah. The other characters and Laurent celebrate birthdays every morning, and they roll a dice to determine whose birthday it is. Bear's had like 3 birthdays in a row and is definitely cheating the system.
Yeah, I don't know how they do that shit, but yeah, it's weird because the only thing on this die is a birthday cake.
Yeah, where did they find this die that is five blank sides and a cake?
Yeah, what purpose does it have?
Yeah, what kind of board game is that? Roll the cake die, see if you got the cake.
Yeah, the birthday thing is weird to me. I don't know how to explain it, and Teddy just gets the birthday cake all the time, and Laurent complains about it.
Hey, Laurent's right. Power to the people.
Yeah, and Buttercup, I wouldn't say so much that it's sexism so much as that's kind of, this is going to be a very broad statement, that's more along the lines of what Barta would have been used to growing up in Europe in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, that's fair.
So it is sexist because women can, and I believe should, have full lives. And if you want to be a stay-at-home mom to three grown-ass puppets, go ahead. If your fulfillment is other than that, go ahead. Don't give a shit. Live your best life. But it is a little weird to me. And that's I think, just coming from an American viewpoint. Because all of the complaints I saw about that were from American audiences.
Yeah, because
this movie did come out in the States, I believe, 2012.
Oh.
Like I said, there are a lot of release dates slapped on this. So it's 2012. Americans are like, how dare a woman be shown as a stay-at-home housewife? Okay, easy there. It's a European movie, and it's a porcelain fucking doll.
Yes, it is. It's probably down. Just because she would crack her fucking face.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love Bear, though. He goes to work at the train station and is more or less the train station manager. Once he's done with his job, he just gets into a sleeping bag and eats a bead and goes to bed.
I'd like to imagine that it's a sleeping pill or a hard drug. Also, his name is Teddy.
I refer to him as Bear throughout, so
I definitely strap in, babe. Jesus Christ. All right, fine.
The worm eyeball that the bust sends is disgusting, and I hate it.
Yeah, there's a creepy, like, spy worm eyeball, which is fantastic. It's super duper cool. And a lot of this film, part of the charm of it for me is that everything is very handmade and intricate. So this worm eyeball is made out of things that you would find in an attic. Like a weird eyeball that popped out of a porcelain doll, and a little bit of pipe, and a little bit of everything. And a lot of the things that you see in this movie, they're all like that. It's all kind of assembled by hand, and it has this very tangible feel to it. And it's a lot of, for me, especially the evil, gross creatures, it was a lot of, thanks, I hate it, because the design is great, but I hate it.
Oh, yeah, 101%. The most, it wasn't jarring, but it was just like, oh, whoa, they cut to the live action cat. And I was like, oh, that's a cat.
Oh, yeah, and then they have a puppet cat, too, because the cat's an evil character, spoilers.
It took me a minute to, like, put two and two together and be like, okay, so this thing that's around now is supposed to be the real cat I just saw.
Yeah, it's the same cat, and it takes you a hot second because it's, like, a cat dressed up weirdly.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to explain.
A hat, and he's also
It's a trench coat.
Smaller.
Basically a trench coat.
It is.
He's going to show you some watches. Or a penis.
He's very creepy.
Oh, yeah. Okay, wait, you hated that worm, and I super duper hated the character, which is like an earwig body with a man's face that they refer to as Doctor.
Yeah, no thank
I
you.
Hate it. Thank you, I hate it.
It's awful. When all of the bugs swarm Buttercup's kitchen, she just looks so angry, and she looks angry like 90% of the time, but there she was just like full-on mean face, and I loved it.
It really is just kind of the way that she is due to being a porcelain doll. So there's not much that, you know, can be done with her face. I didn't watch through the credits as closely as I feel like I should have, but I don't think there were a lot of animators on this. I feel like it was just Barta.
Wow.
But it couldn't have been. Hold on. I am so sorry. Now I'm questioning everything I know. Everything I know. Yuri Barta was the director. Who did we have? Animation department.
Okay, department's more than one person.
It lists two people.
Ah, it is more than one person.
I would assume that Barta had an actual direct hand in this as well. Like, he was definitely moving some goddamn puppets.
Yeah, I mean, these puppets were going.
He knows what he's doing, so I assume that he also moved puppets. Could be totally wrong. Hey, Yuri Barta, if you're listening to this podcast, please let me know if I'm wrong. He's never going to listen to this podcast.
You don't know that. So, maybe Yuri Barta's got nothing better to do.
Lol. No, he's trying to fund his baby, his special film.
I thought he was trying to fund his baby.
No, he's old.
Yeah, people have babies.
That's gross. Back to Buttercup. So she's a porcelain doll. There's not really a lot that you can do with a porcelain doll face if you're not, like, 3D printing a bunch of porcelain doll faces a la Laika. So outside of Laurent, the faces cannot change drastically. There are scenes when they do change a little bit, and you can tell that there is some claymation going on with the face, but typically they're just kept normal and static. Like, that's just the nature of it. And there's a lot of expression in the eyebrows.
It's true. But it's nice because they're toys. It makes sense that they wouldn't have fully animated faces. That didn't bother me.
Yeah, and like I said, going back to everything being tangible, inside the trains, like, you're not going to animate inside of a teeny tiny train. That's hard. They cut the windows. They just cut to the windows, and it's paper animation. So it's hand-done animation pasted into the windows of the train. And I had a hard time telling whether that was, like, place it in, take a picture, place the next one, take a picture, or whether that was composited on, which is what I like.
Yeah, that was so nice. Everything is so small.
Yeah, it's because everything is so small. And the scale, everything, the scale of it all, so spoilers, they bring in people, which we're going to talk about in a hot second. So they bring in human people, and they pick up these dolls. And they have a sense of scale. So everything in the attic seems really small, and that's because it is. And they keep that scale.
I hate the evil bust, but I love the fact that he's just a human head when he's animated.
Straight up, it's thanks. I hate it. He's a metaphor. Just a big, golden, shiny asshole metaphor. For the Soviet Union.
Yes. And then they bring in a real child.
A real ass child. Whose name I want to say is Agnieszka, but that's definitely wrong. It's something. She's got a... They're... Oh, God, 2009. They are Czech speakers. They are Czech actors used in this film, and then they're dubbed over in English. So that's a thing. Also, this takes place in a fucking attic, and they're hanging up, like, clothes to dry?
Yeah.
Is that a European thing? Why would you do that in an attic?
It seems like it would just be wet.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Yes,
We've always hung clothes outside. And that's, like, a very... I always associated it with, like, my Polish grandparents and shit, but, like, I guess it's hey, all zero Czech Republic listeners, do you guys hang your laundry inside your attics? Like, comment, and subscribe if you do.
And remember to ring that bell to be on our notification squad. What up, Czech Republic? Moving on. The evil minions of the bust harass Buttercup, leading her to cause enough of a ruckus to be picked up by an actual child, all caps. She's placed on a high shelf far away from her home and is taunted by the cat into jumping into the maw of a dust-a-dactyl, being captured by the bust in his evil lair. The other toys set out to find her after Laurent realizes she's gone missing and go to Madame Curie, the mechanical mouse, for help.
Yeah, so I personally felt that the Czech being dubbed over for English was unnecessary, and I wish that I had the movie with its original Czech language track, but at the same time, I think we were getting the exact same concepts.
Oh, 100%. I couldn't hear the characters for most of this film. The mixing was really funny, and I was like, they're not saying anything relevant. I can tell.
I always, and this is just, I think we've discussed this before, we pretty much have subtitles on in our household by default just because one of my roommates is hard of hearing. So I always have the subtitles on, and I actually put the subtitles back on for this because they were turned off. And I was like, no, I need this. Because Forrest Whitaker as Teddy kind of mumbles a bit. So I was like, yeah. I need this shit. Slap those subtitles on me. Slap them subtitles on. Them slap
Teddy
titties.
Teddy is most of the time just saying terrible, selfish things, though.
I love Teddy.
I also love Teddy.
Yeah. The cat puppet. This is the first appearance of the cat puppet?
I think it's the second appearance of the cat puppet.
Second, because he derails the train. There's a train crash, guys.
The train tracks are made out of chalk, and he erases the train tracks and then redraws them. It's very funny.
Yes. Yes. So the trench coat cat has a disgusting German accent, or it seems like he has a German accent, but it's hard to tell what the person was going for, honestly.
Yeah, I don't know, but I do love that cat.
Everybody loves a evil cat character.
Who doesn't? And also, this is exactly where the tides turned, and I loved Laurent, because he's so well animated.
He really, really is, and I really enjoy how Laurent is done, but he's gross. I love how stretchy and squishy he is when it comes to his large actions, but like looking at him was super painful.
Also, there's dirt clods with legs at one point, which are part of the evil minion squad. They look like toys from Sid that Sid would have made in Toy Story. They're terrible.
Oh, is this the potato legs? Oh no, yeah, that comes later.
Oh wait, no, what am I thinking of? No, I'm definitely thinking of like the potatoes with legs.
And they're dancing, and they're just
they have
give
like
her
hot
to
lady
us,
legs.
Give her to us, yeah. Yeah, Madame Curie the Mouse, we're going to gloss over that because it's Joan Cusack is the voice.
Oh!
Yeah, but can we talk about the dust dactyl for a hot second? It's like this gross towel or rug that was like left out and is all dusty and disgusting and gray and brown now, but it flies.
It was great.
It's so cool.
I love it.
Yeah, thanks. I hate it, but I also love it a lot.
Yeah, like, you put a lot of effort into this. I can tell. It's making me sick.
So many things here are just very inventive because you're working with what you'd find in an attic.
Yeah, they do a really good job of that.
Yeah.
So, the bust and his evil minions hoist Buttercup up into a cage and set her to clean the incinerator. The other toys journey through the attic to try and get to her and encounter various horrors. See, flies, the roof, along the way. This movie is terrifying in a way that is indescribable.
I would say it is describable, but I couldn't. I'm sure somebody with better vocabulary could describe why this movie is terrifying. But I cannot help you.
Fair.
My vocabulary is not that large.
I understand that, but I also am just... I thought Buttercup was going to get burnt to death immediately, and I was ready for this movie to go hard into we're not playing, this doll is dead.
Oh yeah, because this is where the potato ladies came in, and there's... Okay, so there are... But okay. Buttercup is just like, I will never be yours, because we've got our classic captured princess disobeying everybody, yay. And he's just like, we'll send you into the pit or whatever. Or like, they're just like, I know exactly what to do with you. And they begin vaguely lowering Buttercup down, I think. And then we cut to the potato ladies, and it's just this dissonant, screeching track. And they're chanting. They're just like, give her to us, give her to us. And they're talking about like how they're going to eat her, basically. And it cuts to a shot of some doll hands in a pot of boiling water. And it's like, holy actual fuck. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
It was metal. Like, I was ready for her to get eaten, but I was also just flipping terrified. There's so much fear here, and it's just, God.
It's real. It's bizarre how scary it is, because you can't explain why you're scared or horrified, but it's just this deep internal visceral feeling. And I think because everything in this movie is so tangible, maybe that's it. Like, you can reach out. Like, I'm never really scared when I'm watching something from Laika, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, the visuals might be like, ooh, spooky. But at the same time, I'm not like, that's horrifying. Because it's not as tangible as the things in Toys in the Attic. Like, I could make a potato lady. Holy fuck.
Oh, real question, speaking of your stop motion expertise.
What's up?
How did they do the rain effect when Laurent was scaling the roof?
So, to the best of my knowledge, and I did not go back and watch this 18 million times to break it down, it looks like actual water, especially when he like falls into the pipe. There are live action bits of this movie. So when he falls into the pipe and is getting carried away, it looks like actual water. And then when he is running on the roof and it's like kicking up a little bit of water, I think that would be more like, I would do it as like glue or Vaseline to get the shine. Because you can get, if you have hot glue guns, you can make raindrop shapes and you can kind of mold it. And then it is inherently shiny, so you can create like replaceable bits of rain and things like that. But I know we've done glue before for raindrops. But the rain that's falling over the whole scene is like a 2D effect, for sure.
Oh, that's neat.
So like as it's falling, that's like a 2D overlay.
See, I knew you'd know the answer because I was like, it's clearly not real water, but I don't know what's happening.
It looks like real water. I like it.
Yeah, exactly. I was gonna comment on it, and I was like, I don't know enough. I need to ask. I'm done.
It's okay.
And in the same vein, they just eat pictures of food and clay while they're on their journey, which is very funny to me. Just like a picture of a sandwich.
My comment to that was, well, duh, what the fuck else would toys eat? But honestly, yeah, it's pretty charming.
I looked down to write that comment and then looked back up, and there was a 2D segment where Bear was being put in an oven, and I was like, all right, yep, this is happening.
Hell yeah.
Bear's sleeping bag looks so cozy and warm.
It super was. Like, honestly, I just want to be that cozy in life because nothing would make me happier. Just to be, like, permanently snuggied.
Yeah. Like, just so comfortable.
Just nice and cozy and just tucked in forever.
They did a lot of great shots during the adventuring sequence as well, where they experimented with the 2D sequences and first-person shots. It showed a lot of thought was put into the cinematography of this ridiculous film.
Yeah, it definitely added a certain depth. I agree with that. There were no shots in this movie that felt out of place. Like, occasionally you're watching a movie and you're just like, who the fuck? What is happening? And none of that happened in this movie. It was all very, very well laid out and very planned. And it just feels right. And like the point of view shot, you're talking about the fly, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the fly is like attacking Sir Handsome while he and Teddy are trying to cross this ravine, which is actually just the space between like two dressers in this attic. And you get this bizarre sense of motion from it because it's the fly like hitting Sir Handsome in the face. And then the washing line is bouncing and he's shaking around. So it's pretty great. It's pretty great. Once again, the head of state and his army and the land of evil are just so evil. And the head of state has detachable hands. Have we talked about that yet?
No.
He has detachable hands that are, he wears black gloves and they're just like gold mannequin arms. And that and Dr. Earwig are like the worst thing about him because he's a bust. He cannot move. So yeah. He rules over his side of the attic from his high place. the metaphors. Okay. And, you know, he has his hands in everything and he has all these minions that he can send out to do his work. It's pretty metaphorical, like solidly. But he's also gross, and I hate the detachable hands.
Fair. Yeah, it's nasty. And it just keeps going. The other toys manage to send a plane to the most handsomest toy in the world and bear, giving them reinforcements against the bust. The bust prepares for war by releasing a garbage bag onto the floor of the attic and ambushes the toys in the process, sinking them into the Black Sea. The bad guys celebrate their victory with a terrifying feast as Buttercup watches on and sobs. The toys survive in a submarine made by Madame Curie. The evil troops, using duplicates of Buttercup, trick each toy into their clutches in attempts to save the fakes. The toys manage to escape and in the process rattle the cupboard where the bust sat, smashing him into infinite pieces. The toys then save Buttercup, but Teddy finds a pocket watch that turns into a black hole and I audibly screamed. The black hole swallows up all of the evil toys as our heroes and Teddy safely fly away, the submarine now a plane. They celebrate their birthdays from the safety of a trunk in the attic.
Yeah, so there is, in that, there is a scene where Buttercup is still refusing to cooperate with the head of state. And so the head of state tells Dr. Earwig to basically, like, take her away. And it is implied that she is, like, forcibly operated upon.
Oh!
Were you there for that?
Yeah. Yes, okay, cool. I was, but it didn't all come together for me.
You're welcome. The plane crash was hilarious because the plane is a vacuum that they've plugged into the wall. And so they go the length of the cord of the vacuum and then it pulls out of the wall and that's why they crash.
Beautiful.
So it's like, yep, this is a real thing. This is a real attic. And the trash bag ocean, holy shit. Like the way there's also a scene where there's a flood, like water gets in from the window and it floods, but it's blue cloth. And it's so like every effect in this movie is so, so, so cool. I love the trash bags. I love the water effects. I love the fire. Everything about this is fantastic and I love it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. The feast that they have is super nasty. It's like Jello made out of plastic and there's sparkles everywhere, but garbage. Yeah. It's crazy.
It's so cool though.
Madame Curie and Laurent are the only useful toys out of the entire group.
I didn't understand why Madame Curie was like throwing around all that Jewish slang.
Not Jewish, I got nothing.
Yiddish would probably be the better term. Because it's not Jewish slang, it's just like Yiddish. And it is confusing to me. The feast. Disgusting. Yes. But the creatures. How fucking cool were those things?
Right?
There was like a little, what are those little, like the little alligator clips that you use when you're making, like when you're a set of jumper cables, but much, much smaller.
Yeah.
And those were like beaks of like creatures, and it was like three-headed creature that had the alligator clip mouths, and they've got those teeth built onto them so that they can grip whatever you clip them to, and they're tearing into whatever is in front of them, and they've got a disco ball going, like festive fucking disco ball. That's funny. And so there are also Buttercup clones, which was what Dr. Earwig was working on when he was like forcibly operating on Buttercup. And I was like, clearly they don't love their friend enough if they couldn't tell which Buttercups were cloned. And why did they bring literally everyone on this rescue mission? Because like they've got everybody. So it's Teddy, Laurent, and Sir Handsome are the three main characters that live with Buttercup. And then there's Madame Curie, who is the radio celebrity, basically, and also resident inventor. And then there's a schoolboy that they bring along.
Yeah,
and there are some chess pieces. He was in the very early bit with the train. He's like, I have to catch the train. Oh, no, I'm going to be late. And I was like, that's nice. Yeah, and then there are some, like, chess pieces or, like, board game pieces that kind of wander in and out. And I was like, why did we have to bring the whole fucking toy village? Like, why couldn't we just have our main characters?
Yeah, they knew that they needed the whole team.
Also, Teddy, in his bag that he carries, I call it his bucket of drugs because he just has a first aid kit.
Oh, yeah. Teddy
bucket
is...
Bucket of drugs.
Teddy's ready for this. Also... we've got Buttercup. Everyone's together. The adventure is clearly over. We're taking her home. Teddy walks off stage right and finds a present behind a thing and opens it up, and it's the black hole. And I'm sitting there like, what is happening? The adventure was clearly over and you just messed it all up, Teddy.
No, because everything evil has to get like sucked away for good. And I think the fact I might be reading way too much into it. I kind of felt like the watch was for someone else, and I couldn't tell you why the scene exists, and if I could, that I would, because outside of getting rid of the Land of Evil, there's no reason for it. And I think...
The watch was addressed to Teddy.
Right, but I feel like it was for, like, an actual person named Teddy. And Teddy just happens to find it. Anyway, I'm reading way too much into it, but... The reason I think that Teddy finds it, and once again, this could just be film... major me coming out for the analysis. The reason Teddy finds it is because he's been so selfish the whole time, and he almost gets sucked in, and he kind of has to, like, the fact that he doesn't get sucked in means that he's proved himself and he has changed, or whatever.
Wow.
Hey, Yuri Barta, if you're listening to this podcast, please let us know. Yeah, and then they celebrate, and it's like, yeah, hey, let's never remember that shit again. Also, it's everybody's birthday today, because we're all reborn, because the great evil has been defeated, and this is the first day of our new lives for the rest of forever. Symbolism!
Hooray! Happy birthday, everyone. I did like that they all celebrated their birthdays on the same day at the end. It was
It
was a good, like, heartwarming, like, oh, that's nice.
Everybody's born again!
Yeah, you gotta make it weird.
Uh-huh!
I hate the fact that the poster for this has Toy Story knockoff font on it.
Because hell yeah.
This movie was more exciting than Toy Story 2 or Toy Story 3. This was a trip.
it's something. I really wish a lot of stop motion films outside of Laika, they don't really do a lot of making ofs, especially stop motion films that aren't from the US or even the UK. There are a couple making ofs for Aardman films, especially for Pirates Band of Misfits. There are making ofs for that. But there aren't really a lot of making of featurettes for stop motion films. And like Eastern Europe, you're not really gonna get a lot of that, and especially a smaller independent film like this where you've got a crew of like maybe 40 max, including the 20 actors, like you're not getting a making of. I'm sorry. And I would have loved to just see the work in progress of like the train or the the just anything in this movie, like, how did we do the water? How did we do this? How did we do that? But when you only have one camera, you can't really do that. Because I feel really, like this was a one camera setup.
Oh, 100%. You could tell that this movie was made with love and also had a lot of pre-production going into it.
Mm.
All of the shots were really consistent. They broke the 180 line exactly once. Just one time, and it was because they were coming out of first person into third person, so it like got wonky right there. But otherwise, everything was very clearly well planned out and had been drawn and like mapped beforehand. It was impressive to watch.
Yeah, that's, first of all, that's the movie. It's over. It's done. It's concise under 80. It is short.
It's a very pleasant film, too. I really recommend it if it's a rainy day and you're just like, all right, I'm going to settle in, have a cup of tea, and watch something nice.
Yeah, it's definitely visually pleasing. If you're looking for something borderline perfect, not going to be the movie for you. But
no.
It is, I think it is a visual accomplishment for the scale of what it is. It is an excellent, excellent film. And
I agree.
Yeah. If you're researching this film, you're going to find a lot of articles that compare Yuri Barta to Jan Svenkmeyer. And I don't necessarily think the two should be compared in the way that people are comparing them. Yes, they're both stop motion animators or directors of animation, but the way that they craft is much, much different. And like I said earlier, people harp on the gender roles with Buttercup because she's at home and the male toys go to work. But like I also said, it probably has to do with Barta being born when and where he was. And for something made in 2009, it reminds me of the older European stop motion films for how dark and whimsical it is. And it's not loud and colorful. Like, there are colors. Let me tell you, there are colors. And the good toys are, air quotes around good toys, they are more brightly colored than the toys in the Land of Evil, which are gross and brown and drab. But it's not loud, and it's not formulaic like an American movie. And what shocked me the most, I think, was that audiences generally enjoyed Toys in the Attic, despite it being very much not an American movie for American audiences.
It's a, when you sit down, it's captivating in how odd it is. And then you realize that it's got a very straightforward and interesting story. And you're like, all right, I'm in. I'm sold.
Yeah. One reviewer, Peter de Bruges, would you
say?
Yeah,
that sounds right.
Peter de Bruges compared the film to Toy Story in a review for Variety, and he complimented the animation and said, despite their inflexible faces, Barta conceives all sorts of inventive ways to bring these inanimate objects to life. Should a given shot prove too tricky to accomplish practically, Barta has no qualms about using digital compositing to blend stop-motion plates. Though rudimentary, the fire and water effects are especially effective. To me, I wouldn't call them rudimentary, because that is very rude. No pun intended. I think it's rude, because they are done that way for the purpose of the film. If Barta had wanted real fucking water, he would have used real water. It was an artistic, stylistic choice. So calling the effects rudimentary, I believe, is incorrect. Peter can fight me on this, but it's the way it was meant to be. It wasn't rudimentary. It was a stylistic choice by Barta to keep the feel of the film.
Yeah, we keep saying, like, thanks, I hate it. Oh, it's kind of visually jarring, but it's all on purpose. You see exactly what they're going for. This isn't a Delgo or a Space Chimps where it's just bad. This is very clearly an artistic piece, and a lot of good choices were made to create visual harmony.
Absolutely. And then commercial prospects, De Bruges says, For all its charms, Toys in the Attic feels vaguely sinister and may prove too intense for younger kids, which is a testament to the film's pacing and score, as well as how deeply audiences emotionally connect with these occasionally macabre toy characters. And they are. There's no other way for me to say this. It's very European.
Yeah.
They're not going to spoon feed you anything. It's
no.
All. It is the way it was meant to be. And I really, here's my problem, and this is going to be a very broad statement, so literally just going to apologize in advance for what I'm about to say. A lot of foreign movies that come out in the U.S. are either edited for American audiences or they are made for American audiences.
Yeah.
They are so formulaic, and movies that are not in that mold do not do well ever, and they don't get the release that other movies do because they're not as marketable. So something like this, where it's, you know, the quick under 80 minute jaunt and it's got a quick pace and it's not like every still shot from this movie is a work of art, but that is my opinion as a stop motion animator. And a general person that you pull off the street, if you showed them a clip of this, they'd probably be like, hey, yo, what the fuck?
I mean, I was like, hey, yo, what the fuck?
Yeah, but you also, like, enjoy films critically.
That's true. I did enjoy this. This took about 15 minutes to grab me. The first 15 minutes, I was like, Emily, why? Why is this happening to me?
And the second the human characters come in and Buttercup gets fucking kidnapped, you're in.
Oh, the real cat came on screen and I was like, oh, I'm in. All right, let's go.
I'm in. Yeah, so...
I also like the train was very interesting. And that was also
the
like
train.
Oh, okay.
I love the train. I love the train. I love the train. I cannot say this enough. I love the train. It's got... So the mechanical parts of the train, it's got wheels, but it's built out of small scale things. Like it's... what are those called on steam engines? Fuck. I don't know how steam engines work, but like toothbrushes.
Oh.
They are toothbrushes.
The pistons are toothbrushes.
Yes, the pistons are toothbrushes and the tracks are made of chalk and it's just beautiful to look at. And it's so intricate and so delicate. And it feels like as you're watching this movie that you could reach in and pick up this toy train. Because that's what it is. Everything in this movie is something that you can reach out and you can touch. And they do. Buttercup gets picked up and Laurent interacts with real live things and they have the cat and they have the attic and the scene where the little girl and her grandmother are wandering around, you see the physical scale of these things. So
it's
Buttercup
amazing.
Yeah, and the attic is large. It is a large attic, but the scale of it with the people, you're just like, okay, it's a normal size attic. But the second you get down to the toy level, this place becomes vast. It becomes insanely huge. And that's because that's how it is to the toys.
Yeah.
And I love it. Other people loved this movie too. Toys in the Attic won a number of awards, including Best Feature at the 2010 New York International Children's Film Festival and the 2011 Tehran International Animation Festival. Ooh, boy. And the Kezkemet City Award and the Kezkemet Animation Film Festival. I am ballparking the pronunciation of Kezkemet, which is also pronounced wrong. It's K-E-C-S-K-E-M-E-T with an accent mark over that last E. So it definitely has that C-S, I think, pronounced as Z, but it also has that K in there. So I'm like, am I doing the S-K? Am I doing the Z sound? I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm not a fluent speaker.
You're okay.
I believe it's Hungarian. The Kezkemet City Award began as one of the KAF, which is the abbreviation of this film festival, thank God. The City Award began as one of two top prizes which were awarded to only Hungarian films, but in 1999, it was shifted to the Festival of European Animated Feature Films and TV Specials. So the City Award has become the top international prize. So it won the top international prize there. And it also, this kind of shocked me a little bit, it earned an Excellence Prize for Animation at the 2010 Japan Media Arts Festival. And in this case, it lost the top prize to Summer Wars, which I love.
Oh, Summer Wars is amazing.
Summer Wars is amazing.
Sorry to get very hype about that.
That's okay. So the same year that Summer Wars came out, this film was up against it in a film festival. But I was really confused about that because the Japan Media Arts Festival, it seems very heavily Japanese. Like, I had a hard time finding foreign films in their lineups. And it seemed like every, like, 2 to 5 years, a foreign film that was not Japanese would slip in. And, like, nothing non-Japanese, so their version of foreign, won. But they're clearly, like, top contenders, but it was just odd to me to see Toys in the Attic, this film from the Czech Republic, up against something like Summer Wars. I have to find it for you, because it was just so bizarre, the lineup that it was against, because everything was Japanese, except for this. Summer Wars
is, like, well-renowned. People love Summer Wars.
I love Summer Wars.
I mean, Summer Wars is great.
I love his work.
Oh, God. But yeah, it's amazing to think that it even got recognized.
Oh, yeah. So it was up against Tokyo Magnitude 8.0, which is an anime television series. And there was The Cable Car, which I am unfamiliar with. It doesn't have a Wikipedia page. And then another page.
The
House of Small Cubes, the title is in French, but it's a 2008 Japanese short. If you're going through Japanese animated feature film, Japanese animated film, Japanese animated short, Japanese animated series, Japanese animated. So 2010 saw the top prize going to The Tatami Galaxy, which is a novel. And 2011 saw Puella Magi Madoka Magica as the top winner. But you're going through, Summer Days with Ku is a Japanese animated film. Girl Who Leapt Through Time, Japanese animated film. There was one, the one that I could find, and it's always Eastern European offerings that make their way into this festival. So the last one that I had seen was 2006, and it was My Love, which was a 2006 painted on glass animated short that takes place in Russia. But everything else is here you go. It's Japanese.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's so every 3 years you slip in a non-Japanese movie and you're like, huh, okay, cool. I don't think anything not Japanese has won. I'm going through real quick. Obviously, I did that's a lie, in 1999, the painted on glass animated short film by Russian animator Alexander Petrov, who I believe was also the same person who did that thing that I was literally just talking about. Huh, okay, well. Yeah. Basically, it's all Japanese things featuring three Russian people. God, 1997, Princess Mononoke won over Neon Genesis Evangelion.
You're going to say something and I'm going to come fight you because Princess Mononoke is a masterpiece.
Oh, I was going to say I've never seen Evangelion, so.
Ooh! Princess Mononoke is better than Evangelion, no questions asked.
Okay, well, I've seen Princess Mononoke, so I feel like I'm good.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, okay.
I'm revving up. We're gonna watch Ava together on Netflix when it comes out.
When is that happening?
In a couple of months.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, so in summary, it lost top prize to Summer Wars, but was given an excellence prize for the Japan Media Arts Festival in 2010. In a roundabout way of saying it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an award-winning film from an award-winning director who is from the Czech Republic, formerly Czechoslovakia. And he grew up mainly under Soviet, like a Soviet state, like the Eastern Bloc country of Czechoslovakia. So that was Toys in the Attic. There's not really much more to go into aside from you should just watch it because it's really cool.
Yeah, it's a really interesting movie. I highly recommend if you have the 80 minutes to spare, do it.
It is, I did mention, it is available on Amazon Prime for streaming. So,
yeah,
you can watch it. And please, if you're going to watch it, please pay for it. Because Yuri Barta is trying to fund a film. Or, like, I don't think he's still trying to fund it. He made a short film called The Golem. And mm-hmm. he wants to make a feature film based on that short film, which was a proof of concept. And I would really like to see more feature films from Yuri Barta. So personally, I think that people should pay to watch this movie. I would also be happy with more people just seeing this movie and being exposed to films that are outside the norm.
AKA good stop-mo.
I mean, Laika is good stop-mo. It's beautiful stop-mo, but this is like good stop-mo. This is like a stop-mo. You feel
Laika.
It.
Laika is amazing, but Laika is like going to a professional chef who has cooked this one meal for 20 years. It's going to come out perfect and spotless, and it's great. Or you could go to someone who's an amazing home cook who's going to make you something you've never eaten before. And like, yeah, it might be a little messy, but it's so delicious and you've never had it before.
It's like in Ratatouille, where Remy makes the ratatouille at the very end. And it's good.
Yes.
Yeah, ratatouille.
Yeah. So, this has been Animated Opinions. We have opinions, so you can figure out whether or not you want to have them as well. I'm Melanie.
I'm Emily.
And our sponsor this week has been a deep dive into what you can purchase for us from our Amazon wish lists. And as you can see, we are in need of very many things, including bags shaped like cats.
And that 44-gallon drum of lube.
44-gallon drum of lube. A cup shaped like a cactus. Plenty of plush toys of Sonic the Hedgehog characters for some reason. We have the same USB cable three separate times. An entire Totoro onesie. A bat costume that looks very comfortable that I would be wearing right now if I could. Another plush toy, this time of a cat. I think I just want to stitch together a bunch of plush toys into a couch. Bathing suits. Bubble wrap that is somehow also a keychain. Don't ask, I don't know the answer. 100 beauty blenders. What was I thinking? Was I drunk?
Probably.
A crop top that clearly is infringing upon some Nintendo copyrights. That's a no-no, folks. Board games. Lip sticker art temporary tattoos random styles. And finally, the thing that you all actually want to purchase for me. The thing that I come to you for. Click and play value pack 100 phthalate free, BPA free, crush proof plastic ball, pit balls, 6 bright colors. Read, a box full of ball pit balls. So if anyone has $115 to spare, that's what I'm looking for these days.
Is that basically so that we can have a ball pit of shame to be in if we need it?
If we can record this podcast live from a ball pit, I think I would be a lot happier in my entire life. But, you know, My closet would have to be a ball pit.
I'm kind of 100% into the concept of me recording this from a ball pit.
Actually. Every time you move, though, all the balls are going to make noise.
Yeah, but think about how funny that would be. The listeners know that we are in a ball pit recording.
It's true.
And just like you try to get up and you slip and you're just like, hold on 1 second.
It's genius. But yes, please support us. Buy our wish list items, dear listeners.